Fruitful Moments with...
The headlines. Iran's President Hassan Rouhani urges the next U.S. administration to compensate for the wrong policies pursued by Donald Trump. French police and people clash in Bordeaux during a protest against a new law banning the dissemination of images of police officers' faces. The head of the European Commission says that the Union will not compromise on the integrity of its market for a post-Brexit trade deal with Britain. Well, welcome to the studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is News. Thanks for joining us. Iran's President Hassan Rouhani says that he expects the next U.S. administration to compensate his country for the wrong policies pursued by Donald Trump over the past 4 years. Rouhani said that President Donald Trump's failure to win a second term was the result of his wrong policies. The Iranian president said that those policies included issues such as the coronavirus pandemic and racism. Rouhani said Trump's foreign policies also contributed to his defeat in the November 3rd election. The Iranian president said that his country's policies are based on reciprocal respect and commitment. He said if the next U.S. administration respects this, this way would be clear to return to conditions prior to January 2017. That's when Trump took office. Political commentator John Stepling believes that the U.S. approach toward Iran will not change in the long term.
I think that Rouhani's right that Biden is going to reengage on the JCPOA in some fashion or other. He may back off the sanctions, but U.S. foreign policy by and large doesn't change. Given that a lot of European allies want the U.S. to reengage with Iran, they want to be able to do business with Iran. There's going to be a huge incentive for Biden to bend in ways that Pompeo and Trump didn't. But that's probably short-term thinking. Long term, not much is really going to change, and Iran will continue to be stigmatized and unfairly singled out because Western foreign policy needs a villain, and right now that villain is Iran.
Leading a diplomatic delegation, Iran's foreign ministry spokesman has visited Kabul to meet top Afghan officials. Amin Alami has more from Kabul.
In an official visit to Afghanistan, Iran's foreign ministry spokesman Saeed Khatibzadeh is seeking to boost ties between Kabul and Tehran via expanding mutual cooperation, mainly in terms of peace and security.
Security of Afghanistan is our high priority. We think that the security of two nations, Iran and Afghanistan, are very much connected to each other. So we think that through collaboration, through cooperation, we have to be able to secure a stable situation in Afghanistan.
The visit of Iran's foreign ministry spokesman comes as many here believe Afghanistan is entering a new phase, and that is why players like Iran are struggling to keep their role in the country's peace and security.
Afghanistan is entering a new phase, and all regional players have developed new plans in line with their own interests. For instance, Daesh is replacing the Taliban in Afghanistan. The visit of Iran's foreign ministry spokesman to Kabul proves Iran's effort to expand its role in Afghanistan's security.
The visit of Iran's delegation comes as Pakistani Prime Minister Imran Khan visited Kabul last week.
The recent political trips of Afghanistan's eastern and western neighbors to Kabul are a proof of importance of the country to them. That is especially at a time when insecurity is on the rise and negotiations are underway between the Afghan government and the Taliban to bring a lasting peace to the war-torn nation. Sayed Amin Alami, Kabul.
Clashes are broken up between police and protesters in the French city of Bordeaux. The demonstrators set fire to trash cans, smashed store windows, and tagged walls. The protest was the latest in nationwide demonstrations against the new security law. Proposed legislation would criminalize the dissemination of images of police officers unless their faces are blurred. Those found guilty would be imprisoned or receive fines. Activists have denounced the law as a violation of press freedom. Excessive use of force by French police has come under scrutiny. That came after a series of incidents were captured on video and shared on social media platforms. Taxi drivers have brought the Spanish capital to a standstill during a protest directed at the government over worsening working conditions due to the coronavirus crisis. Thousands of taxis parked up in a long queue around Madrid's famous landmarks, clogging the streets while honking. Taxi drivers complained that the local government had taken no heed to their demands. While expressing anger over policies, they urged local authorities to regulate the transport sector so that less taxi drivers work at the same time. The taxi sector is struggling with a declining demand since the start of the pandemic due to restrictive measures. Spain is one of Europe's worst-hit countries by the COVID-19. Like many other nations, the country's economy has suffered terribly due to the pandemic. The British Prime Minister has reiterated that London does not want to extend the current Brexit transition period. Boris Johnson said that he will not be asking for more time to negotiate a post-Brexit trade deal with the European Union. The Premier, however, urged the bloc to accept the reality that his country must control access to its waters if the two are eager to make progress in talks on fisheries. Earlier, the head of the European Commission warned that any post-Brexit trade agreements with London must not hurt the EU single market.
With very little time ahead of us, we will do all in our power to reach an agreement. We're ready to be creative, but we are not ready to put into question the integrity of the single market.
Ursula von der Leyen said that the EU is prepared for a no-deal situation after the December 31st deadline. She urged London to accept what she called fair trade rules. Britain withdrew from the EU in January and is now in a transition period. Two sides are at loggerheads over the future of the trade ties, as some issues remain unresolved. The coronavirus pandemic keeps taking its toll on European countries as the number of fatalities and infections continues to rise. Russia on Wednesday reported a record 507 deaths in 24 hours. That takes Russia's overall fatalities to more than 37,500. The country's total cases are more than 2.1 million. Also on Wednesday, Germany registered a record 410 new deaths from the virus. That brings the country's total fatalities nearly 15,000 out of more than 960,000 cases. Germany is expected to extend a partial lockdown introduced in early November. European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen has warned against relaxing lockdown measures too quickly. She says that there is a risk of a third wave of infections. Jerome Hughes says European governments are under tremendous pressure to get the economies moving again during the winter holiday season.
The problem now is that there are authorities across the EU and in the UK, they're under massive pressure to try and to get the economies moving again for the holiday season in December when we approach Christmas. All the business operators, they want to be functioning. They say that this is the most important time of the year for them in terms of retail, in terms of hospitality. This is when they make their money because obviously, you know, normally January, February, March, April, even May would be very quiet months normally. So they really need this season. And so there's a lot of pressure on governments. But the health authorities are saying, if you do that, if you allow things to reopen, if you allow people to congregate together in these colder conditions with lack of ventilation indoors where the virus loves to spread, then we could potentially have a catastrophe in January, you know, the middle of January, when we see hospitals becoming overwhelmed. And of course, there is a concern as well that with the here in the EU, three working vaccines likely in the next couple of weeks, there's a concern that there's complacency setting in, that people think, oh, well, the cure is on the way, and so we can relax. So all of this is making health authorities very concerned that what we're leading up here to and what we're building up to, you see restrictions being relaxed in the UK, for example, on the run-up around the end of December. So there's a big concern that we're going to see the results of that, then very negative impacts in January, and that is a major concern.
As EU leaders are considering to impose more sanctions on Turkey over Eastern Mediterranean dispute, Turkey says that it will not give in to what it calls double standards amid months of tensions with Brussels. Roshan Saglan reports from Istanbul.
As the European Council is set to convene in December to discuss the tensions with Turkey, Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan has called for dialogue, but warned the EU not to become a tool for enmities during escalating tensions over the Eastern Mediterranean. In his latest statement on Turkey-EU ties, Erdogan said Turkey sees its future in Europe and mentioned Turkey's post-pandemic plans to improve judicial infrastructure and strengthen the economy and other reforms.
We see ourselves as an inseparable part of Europe, with which we share 600 years of historical bond. We're calling on the EU to create a closer bond with us to keep the promise of full membership for Turkey. We see ourselves in Europe, not anywhere else. we aim to build our future with Europe.
Observers, however, say Turkey does not stand any chance to become an EU member despite all negotiations.
In my opinion, the EU does not see Turkey either as a partner or a possible member of the bloc. For the EU, Turkey is only a trade ally. This means that neither now or in future, Turkey will not get closer to becoming an EU member.
Earlier this week, the EU's foreign policy chief, Joseph Borrell, said Turkey isn't sending positive signals and needs to change its attitude fundamentally regarding the hydrocarbon dispute with EU members Greece and Cyprus in the Mediterranean Sea. European leaders say they will watch for Turkey's steps in the next couple of weeks before discussing any potential sanctions in their upcoming summit. Turkey is still a candidate to become an EU member. The bloc decided to effectively freeze accession talks in June 2018 over disagreements on accession terms. Many here are pessimistic about the future of accession talks, despite Ankara's ongoing efforts to meet the EU's demands. Meanwhile, some economists even warn that the accession could harm Turkey's economy. Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
U.S. media say President Donald Trump's plans to pardon his former national security advisor, who admitted lying to the FBI over his Russian contacts. Trump reportedly plans to include Michael Flynn in a series of pardons that he will issue during his last days of presidency. Flynn's secret contacts with the Russian ambassador to Washington was a key part of a probe into Russia's alleged meddling in the 2016 U.S. presidential election. Flynn pleaded guilty in 2017 to lying to the FBI about those contacts. He was fired by Trump less than a month into his administration. In May of this year, the Justice Department withdrew its case against Flynn. It said his alleged lies to the FBI were not significant. COVID-19 pandemic continues to wreak havoc across Europe, with several countries in a rapid surge in both deaths and cases. Earlier, we discussed the issue in our news review program, what our guests had to say.
Daily coronavirus infections and deaths remain high in several European countries as the pandemic keeps surging across the continent. Now, Italy has reported on Saturday some 35,000 new cases and nearly 700 deaths. Britain registered nearly 20,000 single-day infections. Turkey reported its highest daily number with over 5,500 new cases. In Ukraine, new infections hit a record high of more than 14,500. Many European countries have imposed fresh restrictions in recent weeks to try to contain a second wave of the outbreak. The World Health Organization says a tough 6 months lies ahead for the continent. And joining us now are Max Civilli from Rome and Mohamed Mouni, a virologist and lecturer of biomedicine, joining us out of Lancaster University from Lancaster. Gentlemen, I'd like to welcome you both to the program. We're going to start with our correspondent in Rome. Max, hope you're safe and doing well. What can you tell us?
Look, as you mentioned before, we're still recording tens of thousands of new coronavirus cases. Today we had about 34,700 new coronavirus cases, 3,000 less than yesterday. The number of victims is stable. It's pretty high, about 692 today. The situation remains very critical. However, the number of people hospitalized in intensive care units continues to be quite low. Yesterday, that number stood at 36. Today, the number has dropped to just 10. And the head of the Higher Health Institute has argued that the number of COVID cases in Italy is starting to flatten out, and this is good news. Also, the Italy's R rate of COVID transmission continues to fall. Today, the R rate among symptomatic cases went down from 1.4 to 1.18. The R number is a way of rating coronavirus or any disease's ability to spread, and R is the number of people that one infected person will pass on a virus to on average. And the fact that the number is 1.18 now means that one infected person will pass on a virus to 1.18 persons. Measles, for instance, has an R number, and the professor can confirm that, of 15 in populations without immunity. So these are undoubtedly positive signs. However, nobody is expecting the government, the Italian government, to lift the anti-COVID restrictions for now.
Thank you, Max. And Dr. Munir, tell us your thoughts on why there's such a horrendous second wave plaguing the European continent right now.
So I think one of the primary reasons that we are having a quite high number of cases is that, once the first lockdown was ended, the impression was given that the young population are less affected and probably are least important in spreading the infection. And that's how the message has passed into the young population. And if you look onto the number of cases, majority of those cases are into young population from 18 to 34 years old. And that is probably have started from indoor places when nighttime and indoor activities such as gyms, restaurant were very active. And now the infection that has started already is spreading quite effectively. And then that is the reason still the R number is really high in majority of the European countries. In, for example, UK, after 2 and 3 weeks of lockdown, we are having still R rate above 1. It's 1.1, which means that still the disease is spreading. And until we bring the R rate significantly lower than 1, this means that we will have relatively little control onto the infection.
And Dr. Munir, why is it that in some countries we're seeing basically an outbreak that's out of control, where in other places we see, really, really low numbers? I mean, are we seeing underreporting? Are those nations lying? Or have they figured something out to this equation that other countries haven't?
I think this is a very important question to understand also, because, I mean, if we really look within the European perspective, I don't think that any country is having least capability than other, because there's quite a lot of cooperation ongoing between the countries and within the continent. I think it entirely depends at what particular time the restrictions were imposed. For instance, if we talk about UK, where I am speaking from, the number of cases were really increasing significantly at the time when the second lockdown was implemented. But if that lockdown would have been implemented 2 weeks before, when the exponential increase in the number of cases were starting, then we will have relatively lower number of cases. And that is applicable across the Europe, across the world. The appropriate action at particular time is critical. And then, of course, public trust, public participation is also very critical. How quickly people start following the restrictions, because until the interpersonal communication and interpersonal connection is maintained, we can't really have a control onto the spread of this infection.
Gentlemen, thank you both for joining us. It was a very informative news review here. Max Civili, our correspondent, they're joining us from Rome, and Dr. Mohammad Munir joining us out of Lancaster. I wish you both stay safe for the time being and beyond that as well. That's a wrap for a segment of your news review. Thank you for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
Welcome back. The African Union has sent 3 envoys to Ethiopia to help resolve the ongoing deadly conflict in the country's northern Tigray region. Former presidents of Mozambique, Liberia, and South Africa are expected in the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa, for talks with authorities there. That's hours before a government ultimatum for Tigray expires. Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed gave regional forces a 72 hours to surrender or face an offensive against their capital, Mekelle. Abiy has said that he will receive the AU envoys but will not talk to Tigray regional leaders unless they surrender. The premier launched a military campaign against the Tigray People's Liberation Front on November the 4th, accusing it of attacking 2 federal military camps. Hundreds of people are reported to have been killed in nearly 3 weeks of fighting. Over 40,000 Ethiopians have also crossed the border into Sudan to save their lives. Protesters in Thailand have once again hit the streets of the capital, Bangkok, on fresh rallies against the monarchy. Demonstrators gathered near the headquarters of the Siam Commercial Bank to denounce what they call the secrecy surrounding the wealth of the royal family. Thai King is said to be the major shareholder of the bank. Police have already summoned 12 of the protest leaders over the royal defamation. Thailand has been rocked by a youth-led movement since July, with protesters demanding the resignation of Prime Minister Prayuth Chan-o-cha, changes to the constitution, and curbs on the powers of the monarchy. Some of the protests in the past turned violent. And that does it for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
This is IRIB English Radio. please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Basij, Islamic Revolution's Fruitful Tree. In the name of God, salam and welcome to the program. One of the obvious characteristics of Imam Khomeini was his foresightedness and acumen. He would make decisions whose accuracy and importance would be known later on. For instance, less than 10 months after the victory of the Islamic Revolution, he thought that, in order to safeguard the revolution and the country, it was necessary to have an organized and trained body. Thus, the Imam issued the order of establishment of such an organization on December 5, 1979, which came to be known later as Basij Mostazafan, meaning Volunteers of the Oppressed. Then, 10 months after this order, the Iraqi dictator Saddam, at the behest of his masters in Washington and Moscow, initiated an all-out aggression against Iran and the Islamic Revolution to overthrow the Islamic Republic system. In those days, the unique and faithful role of the Basij forces was revealed to all. Imam Khomeini said, "If we want to present a perfect manifestation of self-sacrifice, sincerity and love of God and Islam, who will deserve more than Basij and Basijis?" The outstanding characteristics of Basij forces caused Imam Khomeini and Ayatollah Khamenei to praise them and use lofty words and phrases to describe them. Perhaps the loftiest phrase that the two leaders of the Islamic Revolution have used is Shajare-e Tayyebe, meaning pure and sweet-smelling tree. This has been adopted from ayahs 24 and 25 of Surah Ibrahim of the Noble Quran. There, God likens pure word to a pure tree whose roots are fixed in the earth while its branches are in the sky yielding fruit whenever God permits. Ayatollah Khamenei describes Basij forces with reference to these ayahs. "You, Basijis, are the sweet-smelling and pure fruits of that tree which the great Imam planted. This fruitfulness will continue. Just as God says, have you now seen how God gave a parable of a pure word resembling a pure tree whose root is firm and whose branch is in the heaven, yielding its fruit every time by the permission of its Lord? When the field is favorable and ready and the seed is pure, that plant is not terminable. I mean, no factor can harm it. messages such as sweet smelling and pure tree. According to Ayatollah Khamenei, the sapling of Basij, which had been planted by Imam Khomeini absolutely for God's satisfaction, has turned into a strong and a sturdy tree with firm roots and ample branches that bears new fruits on different occasions. Basij has proved its unending potentials for solving intricate problems and removing various obstacles in every domain. This lofty status of Basij is originated in the divine virtues such as spirituality, sincerity, popularity, insight, religious awareness, submission to the leader, purity, humbleness, simplicity, inexhaustibility, and constant preparedness for every job. Basij has turned into a role model for other freedom-seeking nations. Today, Lebanon, Iraq, Yemen, Syria, occupied Palestine, Nigeria, and other places have learned the model of Basij in their fight against oppressive and colonialist regimes and elements. Principally, any person or group that works with pure intention for the sake of serving the poor and downtrodden masses, God will exalt it in the eyes of people. The characteristics of Basij were manifested during the 8-year holy defense in the best way. These characteristics continued after the end of the war in the form of helping the poor, assisting those hurt in different events, safeguarding the security of country, and health programs such as nationwide vaccination, etc. Currently, since the outbreak of coronavirus in the country, Basij forces have participated in a variety of activities to hamper the spread of the deadly disease and aid the low-income classes who have lost their job. Ayatollah Khamenei says, "Wherever there is a struggle, there is Basij. Struggle in the field of knowledge, struggle in the field of politics, struggle in the field of social activities, struggle in the vast field and great international arena. These struggles continue and will continue." Elsewhere in his remarks, the leader enumerates the features of this jihadi spirit, saying, "Work for God and as a duty, not forgetting the ideals, using all forces and capacities, relentless, inexhaustible, and enthusiastic effort, trust in the youth and belief in the principle of we can." Dear listeners, the important point about Basij is to preserve and bolster valuable divine characteristics. Ayatollah Khamenei keeps stressing strengthening of moral virtues to all youth, especially Basiji youth. He reiterates to them to work without expecting any reward or even encouragement. Like Imam Khomeini, he highlights the principle that a member of Basij should work only for God. Insight is another characteristic of Basij. Ayatollah Khamenei says, "Dear youth, dear Basijis, wherever that you are in the country, increase this insight day by day. Do not let some material needs and paltry issues prevent insight. Protect your insight and know your enemy. The enemy has various stratagems, and that nation will be successful which is not deceived." On the importance of acquiring modern sciences and technologies for Basijis, Ayatollah Khamenei says, "Basij should enter the arena of knowledge ahead of all. You should go and capture the unknown scientific vistas, technological vistas, and innovative vistas." In other words, he believes that Basij should be equipped with two tools of knowledge and faith in order to be helpful in diverse spheres of services to the Islamic Revolution and the Islamic Ummah. Imam Khomeini, God's mercy upon him, said, are always envy of the sincerity and purity of Basijis and appeal to God to resurrect me with Basijis, as in this world I am honored to be a Basiji.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Inside Israel.
While economic and health experts in Israel weigh in daily on how to save the Israelis medically and financially, there is little talk regarding a consequence of the virus that could cause the most damage: mental health. Over 1.2 million Israeli adults reported deterioration in mental and emotional state, but that figure was for the first lockdown. Now, researchers report a 40% increase in that number for a total of 1,680,000.
The first is social distancing and the quarantine. Many people are alone now, and alone for long periods of time and isolated. Depression and anxiety, we've been seeing a lot of these people getting worse, and also people without pre-existing issues. It's just a problem.
The issue of mental disorders in Israel is not new. Unfortunately, it was never properly addressed by authorities as no funds were allocated to it. And now, with the current political chaos and budget deadlock, it seems highly unlikely that the regime would pay attention to this problem.
People are out of jobs. People don't have enough money.
Even in the military, Israelis who are drafted there fake mental health disorders just to go AWOL from the military. We are talking about one-third of the Israeli males and 44% of females avoid being drafted into the military for mental health reasons. Mati Kaspi, one of Israel's leading musicians, posted a message on his Facebook page announcing that he and his family were leaving Israel in order to protect their mental health. He blames the Israeli regime for what he called the sad situation the regime creates for its citizens and culture. Mental health experts are warning of another epidemic in Israel. They say that the emotional and psychological impact of the coronavirus pandemic are no less severe than the havoc wreaked on Israel's health system and the economy. Psychologist Eled Mardo of Haifa University, who is behind the study, reports a 300% increase in requests for psychological treatment. The data shows that 25% of Israelis over the age of 21, that is approximately 1.2 million people, report a deterioration in their mental and emotional state after the first lockdown. This while 26% say the emotional state of their children has taken a turn for the worse. According to the professor behind the study, these are catastrophic numbers. The issue of mental health in Israel is not new. It has always been a social issue that the regime never really found a cure for. Israelis do not seek help because there are few problems. Many people do not seek out mental health services. Mental health services cost money, and as people feel the extended economic strain, mental health support is often viewed as non-essential. About 87% of Israelis with mental health issues stated that they simply could not afford to seek help for their mental health, according to a report published by the American Psychological Association. Due to almost non-existent programs amidst the political chaos and budget deadlock, there is no support for the unemployed to relieve the most severe economic distress. Steps to address the mental health issues in Israel are not being taken so correctly. Researchers point out to the lack of educational campaigns among Israelis regarding identification of mental health problems and appropriate use of mental health services offered by the health plans. Israelis are unaware of what is available.
First of all, a lot of doctors that could provide some kind of assistance or first diagnosis, family doctors, general physicians, were not available at that time. And for a while, you couldn't reach the mental health clinics. And there was a big confusion at the beginning why you couldn't reach psychologists and mental health workers. That was one source. People were locked down at home. And that caused both social isolation and a lot of anxiety among people. People didn't know what was going on. In addition, bear in mind that people were detached from and disconnected from their communities, from their schools, from their everyday life. And all that caused a lot of stress and a lot of times depression as well. So that could explain some rise in mental health states. At the beginning, we saw the Prime Minister showing up in himself, in person, showing up in prime time and addressing the nation. But the way he addressed it, I believe, caused more panic. He wanted to make sure that people take care of themselves. maintain social distance, maintain hygiene, wear masks, although at the beginning people say it's not helpful at all, and then suddenly became helpful. As time went by, people expressed more anxiety, I believe, due to those conferences, the daily conferences. You felt that things are changing constantly, that the decision makers often are not sure about how to handle this issue. They were learning the issue themselves. And the issue of mental health was not addressed at all. It was not an issue at all. People were worried about physical health and breaking the chains of contagion. And so the issue of mental health was not addressed at all. You know, and some we had some leaders saying also, you know, that just go out and have fun, don't worry about it. This issue was not considered at all until it was a huge pressure from public services, psychological public services, that started stressing that the issue of mental health and mental wellness will be addressed as well. This issue was not handled at all.
On social media, here's what users said. Norian said, little is known about the Israeli Jews suffering in Israel under their right-wing regime, children being taken from parents. An estimated 200 fathers a year have killed themselves. I heard this in a podcast from an Israeli activist. There is much poverty. All people deserve humanity. Yossi Bernstein says, she bets more women will suffer from domestic violence than the virus. Priya says, world's first psychiatric corona ward has opened in Israel. I had predicted this would happen. Corona will eventually go away, but people need to keep their minds sane. It's a mental challenge for the world.
There is great political instability in Israel right now. And the coronavirus is being used as a political tool, for instance, to shut down demonstrations in front of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's home. The politicization of this COVID crisis is causing great anxiety among Israeli people, and Israeli people have good cause to question the actions of their government, even the legitimacy of their government.
The issue of mental disorders is prevalent in the Israeli military as well. In fact, 1/3 of the Israeli males and 44% of females avoid being drafted into the military for mental health reasons. To avoid the mandatory service, Israelis rely on a military law that allows recruits to receive an exemption on grounds of medical or health issues. According to Israeli law, any individual whose health standards is less than 21 points is exempted from the military service. Some pretend to be suffering from poor mental health or disability to score low grades, an act seen as extremely dangerous by Israeli authorities. The mental health crisis in Israel is impacting all sectors and parts of Israeli society. An Israeli crisis hotline says it is receiving an unprecedented level of suicidal calls, and many of them are from people who did not have any previous diagnosed mental health issues before the pandemic started. According to the nonprofit organization that is supported by the health ministry, Iran, since the onset of the coronavirus crisis, some 5,500 Israelis who are considering ending their lives have made contact. According to Iran, it took 540,000 emergency calls since the pandemic started. About 60% of these calls are about dealing with daily challenges, financial and employment problems, mental health, and identity crises. The organization stated that 86% of inquiries come from people in crisis, or what it called emotional overload. So far, according to the organization, there is no end to these numbers in sight.
Well, in recent years, we've seen reports that there is an increase in Israeli youngsters trying to avoid drafting by reporting all kinds of mental health and other issues. About half of them, about 44% of them, were ultra-Orthodox, what we call Haredim, and about and size. Pretty much the same number, about 46%, were secular. In some groups in Israeli society, it became unfashionable to go to the military. I don't think it's necessarily a result of mental health problems among young people, partly, which I'll discuss in a minute, but also that it became not such a problem, not such a stigma in Israel, not serving in the army, because it just doesn't fit me anymore and I'm not too crazy about military service and it'll take 2 or 3 years of my life. I believe that having policies that change constantly, that are clearly affected by political issues, and decisions are not based on professional expert opinions, are very difficult to digest and to be accepted. When you see that the entire country is in lockdown, while actually only certain cities are red cities because of a high percentage of sick people, but the entire country goes into lockdown because certain groups oppose closing down just those cities, you understand that there's little professional advice involved in this issue. And therefore, the trust in one's government, in policymakers, in decision makers, in high-ranking officials has deteriorated dramatically. And therefore, you don't know whom to believe. When different ministries are fighting with each other, Ministry of Health, Ministry of Education, Ministry of Treasure.
On social media, here's what users said. Medusa is done, says she's sick of war and the endless glorification of war and military violence. In Israel, so many kids are gung-ho about going into combat units and end up with PTSD and massive mental health issues for the rest of their lives. But no one talks about that. Marwa says, how about Israel pays reparations for the mental health of Lebanese who endured its terrorism and still do down south? Jonathan says, if Israel cared about the mental health of its soldiers, it would stop making them be an occupying force that denies the humanity of other people.
Some people don't agree with the service in the army, but it's a tiny, tiny minority. There is a minority of people who do not want to serve in the army for religious reasons. But there is a small, tiny minority of people who feel that they cannot serve in the Israeli army for various reasons. Some of them might be political, but it's a tiny minority. You have to understand that the people usually serve in the Israeli army willingly and not so much under duress. However, there is a small minority, a very small number, less than 1% or even less than that, who might opt for a release from the army under some kind of mental health suggestion. But this is a tiny, tiny group of people.
Researchers warn that the problem of mental health will persist with or without coronavirus because of the lack of innovative interventions. People, according to experts, need to receive appropriate mental health services, but it is almost impossible due to the limitations related to the economic, social, and technological barriers. The health ministry and the regime are not reaching out by the technology available to Israelis for their mental health care. Given Israel's multi-ethnic society, information is not communicated in a linguistically and culturally appropriate manner, researchers found. This means that the regime and bureaucracy are not using the language used by many Israelis to communicate with them. It only uses the official Hebrew language. Also, religious leaders and organizations play a prominent role in Israeli society and serve as trusted sources of mental health information and referrals. Technically, there are no too limited efforts being made to facilitate the religious and mental health care sectors working more closely together. This leaves the average Israeli citizen with mental health problems wondering how they can seek help in a helpless society. Here's the news making the press in Israel. Ynet News. The health ministry reported that 4,036 Israelis passed away during September, a rise of 18.6% compared to the same period in 2019, even though Israel's population only grew by 2%. The ministry also said that 642 people succumbed to coronavirus in September, accounting for 1 in 6 of all fatalities that month. The Times of Israel, an Israeli study that researched people's financial responses to the direct one-time coronavirus stimulus payments distributed by the regime in August, found that more people used their fiscal stimulus checks to pay outstanding debts rather than going out and spending. The study found that among respondents to the survey, the main use of the grants, 42%, was paying down outstanding debt. Just a little over a fourth, 26%, reported they increased their spending after receiving the grant, and 15% said they save the money. I-24 News. Israel insists what had caused a power outage in many areas across Israel was not caused by a cyber attack. In a statement released by Israel Electric Corporation, it was stressed that the private power station in Be'er Tuvia stopped working, which led to a chain reaction in other surrounding stations. The Jerusalem Post. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said his life is threatened on a daily basis, but the threats are not being taken seriously. When opposition members took offense at Netanyahu for equating threats against him with Rabin's assassination by a right-wing extremist, he said he could give examples. He also accused the press then and now of being monolithic and presenting only one side, and warned against silencing political rivals.
From me and the production team here at Inside Israel, it's goodbye for now.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave 49 meters, 6040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11880 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or BAT5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.